today we're going to talk about mix-ins. So it's still in the area of how can you develop code in a modular way so that you can reuse large parts of your code. And last time you've heard about multiple inheritance as a way to make use of inheritance to compose your units of interest. And today we'll have a different approach. You've seen that for multiple inheritance there are a lot of complications in the sense that you have to have a pretty complex implementation of the runtime, but also a lot of things to do in the compile time, and it gets especially when you have something like polymorphic features in your language, where you can cast and reuse your more special units in a more general way, you run into a lot of difficult situations with which you have to cope as the language infrastructure. So now we're going to see a bit of a different approach to the whole thing, just this mix-ins for, yeah. So that is kind of the motto for this and next lecture. What are other techniques to achieve modular software apart from multiple inheritance? And turns out that there's different approaches out there, come more and more find their way into mainstream languages also. So what are we going to talk about today? We will start with some problems from practical situations which show the situations that are hard to solve with standard means. And then we're going to talk about changes in the way that we organize our software, that we organize inheritance in particular. And these changes will end up in being something like mix-ins. We'll show how we can model mix-ins, how we can implement mix-ins, and then we will see how they are faring in the wild. So we will see one way of kind of using mix-ins as a kind of software pattern, and the other idea is to have actual language support to have to incorporate mix-ins into our code. So that's what we're gonna do today. So the first situation, I'm talking to the gamer right now. So this is the adventure game. You assume that you want to have a kind of dungeon or labyrinthian where you have a lot of doors in there, and there's a lot of variations in there. So for instead of just having a standard door, you might also have the idea that doors might be too short for someone to go through, so you add a kind of filtering method, like can pass, that that takes measurements on the persons that try to go through. Then there's some kind of the idea of something like a locked door, which is a special door that you can only open when you have a key. And then, of course, you might also have the idea of something that is combining those two into a short locked door, which needs to have very small people as well as a key in order to open. So in this situation, you might wonder, well, I have already implemented something like the short door is a special door, and also the locked door is a special door. Now I'm thinking of implementing a short locked door. This seems to be pretty repetitive, and as soon as I have even more options, I have to combine a lot of them to end up with new doors. Probably there's a mismatch here. I don't want to code all these things once again. So, yeah, what would you do? What would be your ideas to deal with a situation like this? Any proposals? course, that's a little bit artificial here, but yeah, you always need something to start from. Oh, the gamer. Yes. So the idea is to have something with an interface. So other idea?
Something like a trade, which would be like an interface with some methods implemented. Well, use something like that. The extend door, use a short door and lock door as a trade. Having the implementation, using the trades, the implementations of short door and lock door, they are inherited in short door.
So, what is a trade?
Bluntly said, it's like an interface in Java, but with some methods implemented.
Ah, you're referring referring to this thing. You're referring to these default implementations in the interfaces, in case of Java and in this case. Yeah.
Well, not really, because you cannot implement methods in interfaces in Java.
Up to last version, you cannot. You're right, but yeah. This discussion, with this in mind, goes a little bit into the direction of what we're going to cover in next lecture. So there will be an official topic for trades, because that's something that also needs kind of language support. So when we just emanate from standard inheritance with what we know as classes and interfaces, that's kind of not so easily mappable into things like these inheritance structure without something that supports kind of adding of features. But yeah, I think next time you will have your finest hour with this approach. So any other ideas what you would do in this situation? Is there any software engineer in here? Likes to do fancy organization of things.
Not a software engineer, but I guess you could do a decorative pattern. So you would have a door interface and then have a concrete implementation to the door, and then you would decorate the concrete implementations with another class.
I guess that is, I'm actually not a real expert for software engineering topics. But I think that it's probably something like you see on this slide. So the idea is kind of to have something like the interface that you mentioned. That that's always the beginning mistake that I do. To have something like the interface that gives us the characteristics of what we want to add to this problem, and then have different implementations that actually cover this special meaning, and then connect them to each other, not via inheritance, but via aggregation. So kind of simulate the behavior that we want with aggregation instead of resorting to inheritance. And what would be the typical pattern here would be that we start off with the naked door that does the basic behavior. So it's this will have some standard things like can be opened without key and can be passed up to a standard height of 180 or 2 meters or something. And then we also have these kind of specializing decorators, we're called. These are classes like these two. they also fulfill this door-like interface, but they have the idea in mind that they delegate all the things that they are not the specialists for to some other entity, and this other entity is their private instance of their kind of thing that they are specializing. So they keep a reference to another door-like inside, and for all the things that they're not experts of, so the short decorator, for example, will delegate the call to can open to its internal door-like thing. And the locked decorator will probably forward the call to can pass to its internal door-like thing. And in this way, you can kind of build your own custom combination of features by just having a special constructor chain where you have, for example, you create a short door via a new short that will get a door as its internal delegation test target, and a short lock door would be a new short which gets a new locked, which gets a new door as its parameter. And in this way, you can kind of chain your decorators in front of your actual object. So this kind of idea comes with a little price. For example, what you have here is that the door, for example, must kind of implement all the methods that are offered by a door-like, even though they might be kind of redundant in at this kind of stage, for because the door might simply don't have certain features without being specialized. The other thing is that in order to do so, you need to prepare this door-like interface, and it must already anticipate all the changes that you might want to do with decorators later on in terms of offering the method signatures already. So few people consider something like this as a harmful design. Others say, well, there's no way around that. So yeah, pick your own fate here. But that's the idea how you could do something like this yourself. But you need to program around a little bit. You need to create infrastructure. You need to create another interface. And that is the situation how you have it out there with the standard system. The other idea is something, well, as we are already deep in this software engineering topics, that's a situation where you kind of need something like a wrapper. So what's the idea here? The idea is that you have a certain hierarchy to work with. For example, streams. You have already specialized your streams in something like a file stream and a socket stream. And then you have, at a certain level, you're concerned with something like you want to have coordinated ways to use these these streams now, because you're coming from different threads, for example, and you want to add something like a synchronized behavior on all of these. So what you need is something like acquiring logs, and before you do something with a stream, you want to obtain the log, and afterwards you want to free it once again. So that's something that you want to do with all of these different streams. But the question is now, well, with inheritance you run into problems here, because it's kind of difficult to manipulate these with a common at a common location. You cannot kind of inherit from both of them, because you need to differentiate between them afterwards in using. The only thing is that you have a common feature that you want to add to both of them. And if you do that with a kind of wrapping class, you can of course do that. But then what you will get is you will once again delegate to your ancestor, and you lose something that you have had before, especially the thing that you're creating a more specialized version of a file input stream, or a more specialized version of the network stream. So afterwards you will end up with perhaps having another stream at least, but it is only a synced stream, so you cannot really reflect the property that you had a certain identity before once again in your inheritance relations and hierarchies. So it undoes the specialization that is actually happening here, and the only way how to come up with a stream once again is, of course, that the two things for which you wanted to add the features actually have some kind of common ancestor or something. So, yeah, it's not an ideal solution in every case, but that's the only thing that you have so far. So all of that looks like there's a lot of behavior simulated with aggregation that made it into coding patterns, so things that happen in a lot of situations in the software developer's life. So these seem to be things that happen often. So you could think of ways to facilitate implementing features for that by means of language features. So in order to do so, we should probably, well, the idea in this part is that you want to do something like inheritance in order to solve your problems. So, in order to deal with something like that, we should probably once again have a look at how inheritance actually is modeled so far with standard means. So let's have a look at what the basics in inheritance actually are. So we see this, we model our things like classes and inheritance right now with a few basic common things like, yeah, things that you'll see when you talk about classes is that there are kind of names which are offered by classes, and these names are often associated with certain implementations or method bodies or something. And this is the way how you interact with these classes. So what classes have are is they have, yeah, they consist of well, too fast. They map the names to certain things, and these things are, well, they are the method bodies themselves. This might be attributes. These attributes are kind of handled as offsets to the start of the object representation. Then there's things like, yeah, for certain names, you don't know yet how they are defined. That's some kind of templates or just interface definitions. So that's symbolized with a bottom symbol here. Or you know too much about them. There are several variants that are offered for this name. So they are probably in conflict. So that's what the top symbol is. And if you later on talk about these different values, well, you consider them incomparable, except for these special symbols that are undefined and the in conflict. They are kind of the terminators for comparison chains. Well, what are we needing those for? We will see later on when we start to relate classes with each other in terms of inheritance and all that. First of all, let's start with what a class is from our perspective. Well, a class is actually just a partial function that maps names to bodies. And as long as we don't specify anything more, we will call them something like abstract classes. That's the most general term that we have in this respect. And then we have special forms of these abstract classes. And for once, we have the notion of an interface. What is an interface? Well, in an interface, all of the names map to no body at the moment, yet undefined. That's how we specify that. For all the names that are actually entries in this map or in this partial function, all of these maps still all of these mappings are still binding the name to undefined at the moment. Then there's our notion of a concrete class, a class which we can use later on in the program, that is characterized a little bit differently. In this case, all the entries that we have in this mapping are pointing to a real implemented body or something, or an actual offset of an attribute. So none of them is undefined, and none of them are in conflict state at the moment. So that's what a concrete class is. All of the mappings are actually bound with a unique valid value. So what can we do with that? Well, we call these, or we introduce a symbol for the set of all possible classes. So we want to come up with something to relate classes between each other. So we want to define an operator that can work with two classes and do something with it, and probably get out a new class. So there's several ways to do that that come into our mind. For example, there's the way to compose two of these classes in a kind of symmetric way, where we don't give priority to one of the partners. In this case, we will have something like a least upper bound of the values on which the mapping is binding its keys. So we can define such a symmetric join by doing a component wise least upper bound on the values. How does that look like? Well, let's define the symmetric join of two classes component wise means that we define what we will do when we look up in this map with this special name n. And this will in the symmetric join, this will be defined by the least upper bound of two values. Well, the values are just the things that are bound to the names in our two particular classes. And as we have defined a very flat lattice as values for the classes, we will have a pretty easy least upper bound or join operator here. And this is defined as, well, when one of the partners is undefined, we can safely take the other one as the value that comes out of the whole thing. Well, if you combine two classes where one of the names is bound to not yet defined and the other name is defined, well, you will take the other name. So these two entries are already covered with this. And there's the situation where you have inherited from both of the partners an entry for a certain name, but the entry is actually the same, then it doesn't matter which one you take. You can simply take one of them. That's this line. And what's remaining is that you have two versions of the values that you have at this composition, which means that you from one of the partners you get one implementation, from the other of the partners you get the other implementation. In this case, we will give conflict. There's too many choices here, so we will yield top here. So that is the symmetric join as a composition for classes. The one that's probably more the thing that we are used to when we think on in patterns of mainstream programming languages is the asymmetric join of two classes. For this one, I have invented this join operator that points to one of the partners. That's the one that is preferred. And yeah, let's have a look at how you would define this. Well, it's pretty easy. In case that there is an actual entry in the left partner, which is the C1, we will just take the C1. And in case that C1 doesn't have any idea what to associate with this member, we take C2's value. Yeah, so that is the thing that kind of models this overwriting behavior that we have in classes. When we relate them with the asymmetric join, we will define that the implementations that we give the system within class C1 will actually override the implementations that are happening in C2. Please note that in this situation we have also we should also probably think about the situation where in C1 we have an entry for a certain name that evaluates to bottom or undefined. In the definition we have here for the asymmetric join, yes, you referring to this? Okay, that was here. Sorry, that is the pre-image. That means that is the kind of in a mapping that is kind of the key set. These are the key entries, the set of all the keys for which this map has entries. That is the mathematical term for that. Yeah, sorry, I think I didn't actually point it out so much. So yeah. The key set. So if you have a name as an entry in this map, I take the value, and if it is has no entry in the first class, I take the second one. I introduced that to differentiate between the fact that you can point to not yet defined, which is this bottom, and also the fact that you might have no mapping at all, which is yeah. So this undefined is actually, there is an entry, but I haven't specified it right now. So in the other case, I would write undefined. Yeah, yeah. So I've deleted the example once again. So this was the situation where an entry for C1 is actually not defined yet, bottom. This is also something that would override the second partner. That is something that actually might be different in some implementations of inheritance, but for languages like Java, in a lot of the applications, you don't actually see that it is implemented like this. There's one spot where you will see that this actually makes a difference, but this will have to do with these Java 8 features that we will cover in the next lecture. So right now that actually does not make a difference. I think the standard behavior for these languages is that if you have introduced a language somewhere in the parents, when you redefine it as abstract, the compiler will bail out with an error. At least That's what I assumed right now. I don't know whether you have different evidence, but I think it should be just an error from the type system. So this situation is actually not allowed by the compiler. Anyway, that's a kind of thing that you can change by definition. You just have to come up with what your actual inheritance operator works like. But in most cases, this is the asymmetric join. And yeah, it is used for inheritance in the way that you see here. That's the Smalltalk inheritance. Smalltalk is one of the ancient ancestors that introduced inheritance as one of the design principles in programming languages, and that's why we hear about Smalltalk when we talk about modeling inheritance, because that's the principle that is kind of dominant for most of the object-oriented languages right now. So this is kind of the standard way to talk about inheritance. And you see, for inheritance relations, I have introduced the operator like this, this triangle, that, and I've tried to kind of mimic the way that your inheritance arrow is pointing in your UML diagrams with this operator. So that is an operator that operates on two classes and yields a new class. And it is implemented in a way that, you take the first class and override all the entries of the second class. And in the end, you override the entry for super to point to the parent class, the one on the right-hand side. So you're binding the super to a class. So that's also why I need the values for entries to also cover classes. You might have wondered in the introduction of all the formal stuff why I put it in there. What does it mean for an example? I have already mentioned that this kind of inheritance is the one that we are actually used to. So let's have a look at that. So first we define a mapping that we call door, and it maps can pass and can open to bottom. So right from the definitions that we had at first, this is what? Well, this is an interface. All of the names point to undefined right now. So the door is something that we call interface. Then we introduce something that is the lock door, and the lock door is a new class here, this one, that maps can open to a certain method body address that we find somewhere in memory. So I've chosen a random number for that. And it inherits from door. And to carry this out means to carry out the operations that we have here. And, well, we can just replace the occurrences of the parameters of this inheritance operator and get that we have to asymmetrically join can open and door. This means that the can open entry overrides the can open entry in door, and we will actually end up with can open being our implementation. For can pass, we don't have any more recent implementation, so this will still be unimplemented. And last of all, we need to bind super to the parent class, so we'll end up with super being the door. So far, nothing too new. That's the kind of inheritance that you learn as a beginner. So you might ask, is there any other ideas of how to do inheritance out there? And I've looked for a long time, and most languages actually organize it like this. But there's also an alternative that I found, but I had to dig very deep in the archives to come up with something. So what I found is beta inheritance. That is, I don't know, does anyone know the beta system? I it's pretty old, it must be said. Yeah, but Beta is a language that comes from a domain where people wanted to have a high level of security, in the sense that they wanted to prevent the programmer messing up their implementations by using inheritance. So they wanted only a very strict way to bring new code into your system, and inheritance seemed to far too aggressive for them. So what they wanted to have is a way to explicitly mark spots where you can use inheritance, and all the other ones would just not. It would be completely irrelevant when the programmer specializes. So how can I imagine something like this? Well, they the beta inheritance is something that works with the keyword inner to actually highlight spots where control is meant to be delegated to the special version that is provided later on. So only in places where the original author used this inner keyword, the system is supposed to delegate to the specialized code. And this works in kind of the reverse way that we've seen before. So that's why I changed the operator symbol to point the other way around, to kind of mark that it is the it's just a kind of I switched the parameters for the or is implemented by switching the parameters of the inheritance relation, and as it is an asymmetric relation, this will yield a completely different behavior. In this case, the implementations of implementation of the ancestor of the parent override the implementations of the child, and the only way to access the specialized versions of things that I already have in my parent is via the binding of inner. So it is just another symbol that I'm using for my inheritance chain, which is the symbol inner, and it goes in the other direction. And the priority for which of the methods I want to choose is for the parent's version. So the syntax for the beta language is also something which is quite weird. So I wanted to spare you the actual details. We will have enough ugly code later on. So the way that you can imagine this thing to work is kind of, I try to use some Java equivalent syntax, would be that you model some base class like the person, and the person has a toString method. And in this toString method, I want always have the name as the output, but I want to offer at least a little bit of personalization by giving the programmer the possibility to use a specialized version of the toString and to put its result in here. So I could, for example, do the inner toString, and later on, I might provide the system with my specialized person, and this specialized person offers an extension, and this extension consists in adding PhD, and this one will flow into the a well-defined slot here in the parent, and yeah, I can explicitly allow inheritance in certain spots of my parent. Yeah, that's a system that was intended to be used in security critical applications where want to allow for inheritance nonetheless. And yeah, the way that they implemented this is like this. So that's beta inheritance. It's also made up from this overriding or asymmetrical join. Just goes the other way around. Something that I don't want to cover too much is that in mainstream languages, there's also a thing that is attributes, and attributes are considered to be a little bit different from the inheritance mechanisms that we've seen so far. But as we won't cover them too much in this lecture, I don't want to highlight them too much. But yeah, the key essence is that for attributes, I don't allow something like overriding. When they are introduced, as soon as I provide another definition of an attribute in my class and I want to inherit them between them, or inheritance relation between them, then I will yield an error. So that's what this definition does. But yeah, it's not so important for in our focus here, but I just wanted to mention because you might wonder what the attributes are all about. This. Whew. So far, that's the situation, how it models the mainstream languages that are out there, the all kind of small talk inheritance languages. So in order to help the people that have these problems that we've seen in the beginning, you might wonder, what are we actually going for? What's the thing that we want to have for them? So the ideal way would be something, as you have already kind of sketched, would be that we want to have kind of modules that just provide certain functionality, and we can kind of inherit them kind of so from the side, so to say. So we don't want to integrate them too much into our inheritance relation. We want to kind of add them in another way that doesn't mess with our inheritance too much. So you can imagine it as a kind of way to cut them out of other objects and integrate them in your bodies. So that would be your ideal solution. And actually, that is what the mixins are all about. The idea is to have these kind of modules and to be able to use them to compose and to build up certain feature sets, and then add them to an already existing object, and even more, not actually only being able to add them to one particular class, but add them to kind of several of them. So the thing is that you want to have something that is actually breaking with the static relation. You want to be added dynamically to different partners. So that's what our new thing should look like, and the way to kind of the dream how we want this to work is, let's be creative and try to come up with a syntax of what we want to do. For example, for the doors, what we want to do is, yeah, we start from our standard door, what we have, yeah, we can open doors and we can pass through that, and four of them we have certain standard methods, and then we have our kind of the things that we had as decorators before, which we call now mixins. And for example, we would like to offer a mixin for locked. And this mixin carries with itself an actual and more recent version of, or more specialized version of, can open. And this can open now queries the opener for whether he or she has the key. And if it has the key, then we'll delegate the rest to another can open that comes from somewhere else. Same goes with the short. it should also carry the new version of the method, and for everything else, it should give either no opinion or delegate to someone else via the super in this case. And now, what we want to do with these is we want to be able to play with them. We want to compose them to each other or to other partners. So what we might want to do is we want to create classes not only by giving a class body, but we might want to compose classes from other things, like you see here. For the short door, we want to compose short with class locked door. We can do the same locked with the door. We might also want to create a new mix in by combining the other ones. So we will kind of chain the locked and the door together with some kind of application symbol. We might also want to stack them like this, and all these kind of different combinations. And how can we do that on the modeling phase? Well, the idea is to have these mix-ins in our model as being a kind of more advanced form of creating expressions on types, or creating expressions on classes. A mix-in itself is something that can be applied to another type thing, another class, so this second order type expression itself, because it can be passed around as itself, and it is applicable to something else. And in order to create such things, we introduce a new constructor that is called mixin, and it takes a new mapping, or class, as we have called them so far. And what it will yield is a new another function that that gets a class and yields a class. And what the mixin actually will do is that it will take its parameter and create a new expression where the parameter is already applied in there. So the only slot that remains open is the parent target. The parent target is kind of still an open parameter that needs to be bound. So that is what the second order expression is all about. So we create unfinished inheritance expressions that still need to be carried out. And we can take them as type objects and pass them around and use them for composing and for applying them to other classes. Some of you who have had something like advanced functional programming, that's something that currying is actually that's called currying. You have said something with Haskell before, so I don't know whether you have already heard about that. Yeah, so that's actually just what's happening there. You have already found a binding for your first parameter in the inheritance clause, and it's only the second one that's still open. Yeah, so what does it mean in practice? Let's try it out a little bit. So, for example, let's introduce a mapping for locked, which is this one, which provides an implementation for canopen, and something that we call short, that provides a body for the name canpass. And now let's use them as mix-ins and compose them with each other. So let's try to create a composed mix-in. Therefore, what we need to do is we need to create two mix-ins, one from locked and one from short. Those are this will create these current versions of the inheritance relation. So for each of the mixins, we will find an inheritance operator in there, those are these two. And in principle, we should also have two unbound parameters, but as we are now composing them with each other, we will have one of them bound to the other partner, so that in the end we will only have one free parameter, which will end up just in the very end of the inheritance relation. And with this, we will chain short to locked, and we will have short as the dominant partner in inheritance, and locked as the parent. And even more, we will still have an unbound parameter for the grandfather, so to say, for this X. And that's if you then do constant folding, we will get an expression that looks like the one from below. We will have the X still unbound, and it is sitting in the very end as the parent. And in the middle, we will get the mapping that maps can open to a certain implementation, can pass to the other one, and also we will have the entry where super will be pointing to locked at first. So far that's nothing too special. That's just playing a little bit with expressions and with the operators that we have introduced so far. The idea is not to take this as a model for a language feature and implement it accordingly. So we could use them in our examples like this. We would kind of mix in this synchronized read-write mix in into our stream hierarchy by mixing it into the file stream or the socket stream, and get new synced file streams and synced socket streams without any code replication by just integrating the sync RV functionality in the type expressions. If you look at the whole thing on the implementation level, if we have still in mind what we did in the very beginning with our dispatched methods, these mix-ins can still be implemented the same way when we go through the super chain and look for the most recent implementation for a certain signature. We can still have this kind of chain. The only thing is that we have to incorporate in our search that there is the standard inheritance. That's the one that we get from extending between those things. And there's the mixin inheritance, and this mixin inheritance is something that, in contrast to the standard inheritance, is not something that's fixed or static. So in this case, the short can have, for once, it can have locked as its parent. The short can also be used in another context where it is where it has the door as its parent. The locked can have short as its parent. It can have door as its parent, or anything else. So this super chain is now. So these links are now. Well, they're not real static parents anymore, but they're more of something like an attribute. So that's why I've used these aggregation arrows here instead of the inheritance arrows. So these are things that are dynamically bound. So that's something that you have to keep in mind. And when you don't have static super references anymore, well, what you cannot do anymore is you cannot pre-compute these runs through the superchains as we have implemented them in C, or as we have seen them implemented in the C++ lectures last and one before times. Instead, you still need to do something like this search through the chain and hope that they that the just-in-time compiler actually is able to optimize away all these runs through the super chain. Anyway, That's the only thing that is different in terms of implementation of the whole thing. What you will miss here is the virtual table, but apart from that, you're still in the same world. You're still thinking in terms of superchain searches for implementations. So that's so far for that. You might wonder now whether, as we have heard last time about multiple inheritance, whether we could simulate these things that we've now invented with means of multiple inheritance. So, any ideas how to do that? It's probably a little bit too much to ask for a thing that we have just introduced right now. But the thing is, there are ideas in C++ how to do something like mixins. Mixins are considered in the C++ world as kind of a programming pattern, and the idea to realize them is something that you see over here. The idea would be to introduce a template, and this template is actually a class template, which you can use as the superclass for the thing that you're defining over here. So the idea is that this identifier here is not bound just by defining this thing, but it is bound only later on when it is used in the context of a certain class creation. We will see that on the next slide, but let's have a look at how this template works. This is a template for the synchronized behavior of a certain superclass, so we can add these features of acquiring a lock and releasing a lock via inheritance. We do that by giving new or more recent or more specialized versions of the read method. And this read method will just delegate for the specifics into the read method that can be obtained from its yet open superclass. The only thing is that it makes it more special is that we will call acquire lock and release lock afterward, before and afterwards. And same goes for the write. What we will do is we will acquire the lock and release the lock, and in between we will delegate control to super's write. So that's all that we need to do now. And that is just another mixin. I think I'm going to skip that right now. That's a logging mixin that will actually just log whenever you do an open and close on the streams that are supposed to be the parents. And the thing is now that you can use these mixins to create new classes in an arbitrary way. You can just use them to create a new class, and the template then is binding the super thing to, well, the lock open close will actually bind to an arbitrary document that is defined somewhere else that has one of an open and a close and a read and a write. We'll bind it to the identifier super, and we'll then delegate everything that we have mentioned so far with this open and close to the super, which will be bound with document. We take this whole class log open close document and use it as the delegate for the sync rv mixin in the outer binding, so that all the calls to super within sync rv will actually be delegated to the super, which is once again the log open close document. So with this, we have we have something that is that is kind of modular and dynamic in the sense that you're not forced to use the whole thing in this way. You can also switch around the position of these two mixes. You can also make the sync RV being the inner module and the log open close to as being the outer one and switch them around arbitrarily. There's no fixed hierarchy that you need to use. It's depending all on the kind of semantics that you like the whole system to have. Yeah. So what would you say? Is that what actually matches this behavior that we have thought about in the beginning? Is that a convincing solution for you? And is it, well, I've promised, or that was the thing that I've given you as the result when I asked about is multiple inheritance something that that helps in simulating mix-ins? So is that what you would consider a valid answer? Well, actually, we haven't used multiple inheritance in there. The thing is, in something like C++, in order to get something that is at least a little bit like a mix-in, we had to resort to doing template programming. So a multiple inheritance is not really a substitute for something like mix-ins. In order to get a kind of similar behavior, we need to have a way to leave the parent open of of a class where we define an inheritance relation. So that is something that doesn't really have to do with multiple inheritance, but you need to be able to have type variables in there, and that's what templates give you. Yeah, well, as we have not really talked about type variables and templates in C++ yet, I should probably give you the effects that this has on the implementation on the slide like this. So with C++ mix-ins, of course they're quite usable and all, but there's still a little bit of different to the ordinary or to the general concept of mix-ins. And with C++ mixes, of course, that's something that can be simulated with templated superclasses, at least to a certain extent. That's quite nice, and it's just kind of natural way to program C++ by just seeing mix-ins as a kind of coding pattern. So far, so good. There's also differences in there, and you might have probably also noticed if you are an experienced C++ and template artist. And the thing is that there's a subtle difference in the use of super in these two approaches. The super that we were talking about in our approach was something that was dynamically handled in C++ templates. The super is not something that is kept as a kind of dynamic and still open attribute or reference that is filled at runtime, but is something that the template system C++ will turn into it will generate whenever it finds the application of such a type of such a template to another type. It will actually create concrete implementations where the types are actually just inlined at the positions where you have used the identifier. So in C++, the whole thing is is not staying dynamic, but it will be static as soon as you introduce a binding for this template parameter, and compile concrete code. This has a little bit of an effect on how you can handle code that that keeps template variables, as in order to, for example, roll this code out as a kind of library, you cannot foresee to which types these C++ mixins will be bound to, because the type parameter needs to be free in certain cases when you see the whole thing as a kind of library part. And in these cases, you actually need to provide the source code for these templates in order to let the compiler inline the type variables when it sees another occurrence of a binding right there. I think in future implementations of the C++ standard, this is bound to change. But right now, the templates are still handled in this way, at least for the standards that I am still aware. I'm not a real up-to-date C++ programmer, so to say. So it might have changed meanwhile. But yeah, that's the situation that I know. You could think of the C++ mixins as the kind of coding pattern, and the things that we have thought about as kind of language support that still needs to be seen in a concrete examples, and so let's probably have a look at a language that has real native mixins. So have you already any clue of what I might use?
Yes.
Oh, Ruby. Are you an experienced Ruby programmer? Ruby is a good candidate. Any other ideas of someone who has mix-ins in languages?
Scala.
Okay. So. Okay. Other ideas? Languages that you know that have something like that? PHP, someone? Wow, that was a pretty strong reaction. Yeah, crinkling your nose. Yeah, no, these were actually those two languages that I also considered for examples. My only problem with Scala was that I thought that the terms for the features were a little bit confused, and the things that I consider as being actual mix-ins called traits there, and that's something that occurs a lot of times in programming languages, that the creators actually implement something and call it like this, and in another language it's called something different. So the thing is that you need to consider by the way that these things actually work, the things what is characteristic about the mixins is that for once they have this kind of super relation, so they need something like linearization be done or something similar, so there's no multiple inheritance involved in these mixins itself, and also when composing these units, these mixins, they're using asymmetric joins of their properties, which is standard inheritance in this case. So that's what mixins are all about. And the one that I chose was actually Ruby. So that's the example. But of course, you can also take Scala. You just have to be aware that the naming is a little bit different in there. But they also have, in fact, what they have is mixins. Okay, so now Ruby. How does this system work? Well, the things that are actually can be considered as mixins are modules. So these things, they act as these carriers of features, which are called mixins in theory. And we see the same running example that we had from the beginning with the can pass and the can open functionality. And we can implement our custom behavior in their bodies here and here. And for everything else, they delegate to somewhere prior in the inheritance chain. So, I can use them and compose them with type expressions. That can be seen over here. Here I create a new class for which I use the short and the locked module in this case. And also I'm inheriting, and what I'm inheriting from is the standard door. And this will act as a kind of chain now. The short lock door will be short in the first place, then it will be a locked, and then it will be a door. And in the order in which we run through our super chain, we will first query the short for the most recent implementation of everything that we want to call from there. Then we will consider the locked, and then we will consider the door. So in this case, we will have when we call the can pass, for example, like here, on a door that is a short locked door, we will query the short at first for the can pass. In short, we will find our test whether our size is smaller than 160. And in case that is fulfilled, we will go up in the super chain. We will query next locked for another implementation. In locked, we don't have any implementation of can pass, so we will be we'll query the next one in the superchain, which will be the door, where we will find the can pass from here. And this one has a more liberal filter on persons that can pass. And that's how we roll out. I think in the past I had Python as example for this, but I found it implemented a little bit more flexible in Ruby. But I think elementary support for these mixins is also found in Python. Yes. You can also use them a little bit more dynamically in the way that, for example, you can create composed mix-ins in this way. So you can introduce a new module that is made up from short and locked. And you can also specialize your an object that you have already introduced or created in the past somewhere. You can specialize it with the extend clause as a short locked. So this is something that's truly truly dynamic, and that's also something that is not done so easily with the C++ coding pattern, for example. So yeah, that's mixins for you and Ruby. And yeah, I hope you've learned a little bit that you have not known before in this time. So what we have done is we have introduced formalisms for inheritance. We will use them next time again when we talk about traits. We have mixins, which introduce kind of a special way of multiple inheritance, and also something that's not so easily done with just plain multiple inheritance. For example, the existence of such a super reference that's dynamically bound, that's something that cannot be done with other means. And we have seen languages where mixins are actually first class members of the language. With Ruby, we have had also the other languages like Python and Scala mentioned. So the mixins are out there and wait to be used. So if you are more interested into the details about that, I've try to locate the first mention of mix-ins in the literature, which is in this this reference. And that's why I called this mechanism that I've presented here mix-ins. For traits, I have another reference, and that's how this classification is actually done by me. How it is actually implemented in real languages might differ from the research results, but I think, yeah, first comes first. So, anyway, if you're interested in Ruby, I have a reference also about that, and yeah, for class and mixins, there's also another reference over there that explains a little bit more in detail. So, that's the literature for you. I hope you found it entertaining today, and hope to see you once again next time. Keep in mind, next time, bring biscuits, I'll bring the wine, and probably some chocolates, and we can celebrate the end of the year together. So have fun, and see you next week. Goodbye.